The federal magistrate in Brooklyn declined to force Apple to help unlock an iPhone in a drug case.
Hillary Clinton voted for the war in Iraq.
We are going to win with health. We are going to win with education. We are going to win at the borders. We're going to win with our military. We're going to win, 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 win.
Now, WGN Radio's daily conversation about the life of business and the business of life. This is The Opening Bell with Steve Grzanich on 720 WGN.
Good morning, everyone. It is 5:09, and it is Tuesday, March 1st, 2016. Welcome to March, and get up and get at them this morning. If you have travel plans this morning to anywhere commuting, you want to take a little extra time. Sleet, as you heard, Tim is coming down across the Chicago area this morning. Some of the side streets are especially slippery, but as I made my way in, it began sleeting a little bit heavier. There's some freezing rain mixed in there as well. The salt trucks are out, but be careful. Allow yourself extra time this morning. Adam's in traffic this morning. He's going to have the latest. We'll have the latest on the weather throughout the morning. March is coming in apparently like a lamb across the globe. The market intel this morning shows all of the European market indices higher this morning. Among the highest is the FTSE up about 32 points. The DAX has been almost up 1% overnight as well. In Asia, most of the markets are higher as well. The Hang Seng, the highest. Among the highest, about 1.5%. The Shanghai up 1.5% as well. The Sensex is up about 3% as well in trading. Dow futures are pointing toward a higher open on Wall Street later this morning. The Dow futures are up 122 points today. Investors are hoping the Institute for Supply Management will offer some more positive news on factory activity for the month of February. It's going to release its manufacturing index a little later on this morning. The ISM's manufacturing index ticked up in December to January, but the reading of 48.2 still signaled a contraction. The index has remained below 50 since September. A lawmaker says the Obama administration plans to renegotiate portions of an international arms control arrangement so it's simpler to export tools related to hacking and surveillance software, since those technologies are also used to secure computer networks. The rare consideration of a rule agreed to in 2013 by 41 countries is set to be included on a December agenda by the United States. A New York judge says the U.S. Department of Justice cannot force Apple to provide the FBI with access to locked iPhone data in a routine Brooklyn drug case. The U.S. magistrate there ruled Monday the decision follows a California magistrate's judge's order requiring Apple to create software to help the U.S. hack the iPhone of the shooter in the San Bernardino killings. In October, the company Apple was ordered to provide this software. Apple has since filed a motion to dismiss this court order, and both of these sides are going to be in court as this fight plays out over the next few days. And technology is front and center on the Opening Bell this morning. We're going to bring in one of our tech consultants on this, who's written an interesting think piece on where technology is and whether or not we're maybe overthinking this just a little bit. Alistair Driber is on the phone with us this morning from London. He is a contributor to Forbes magazine at Forbes.com. Alistair, good morning. Welcome again to the Opening Bell.
Good morning, Steve. Great to be back.
Good to have you. You say that maybe technology business is less about technology than we think. It's an interesting idea. What do you mean by this?
Well, let me explain how I first got a line on this. I'm a strategist. I work with various businesses, quite a lot of them technology businesses. And I was working with these two guys. They've had their own software business for about 25 years. They're older than I am, and I'm 54. And they're not very technical guys at all. You know, I'm not a technical guy, really. I once wrote a program that worked in a language called Fortran in 82. But these guys know even less than I do about software development. And sometimes that's a bit of a problem, but they are doing amazingly well. And I realize the reason they're doing amazingly well is they might not know much about technology, but they know just about everything there is to know about selling. They are, you know, career hardcore sales guys. And their products are things that support the sales process. And we look at the product and we look at about 30 or 40 other things which try to do the same thing. And you see the difference. Theirs has been designed by by people who spend their lives selling to help people sell. The others have been designed by programmers who think they've got an idea of what you've got to do to sell something, but just don't really get it. And so I think, you know, we've got to avoid getting too misled by the occasional unicorns like the Facebooks or the WhatsApp. Most technology businesses succeed because they've got a really good idea about some really specific problem that somebody has, and they've got a solution to it. And also, this is the other thing an awful lot of technology people forget, they've also got a way of reaching those people and convincing them that they'd like to spend some money buying this solution to this problem. So that's what I'm seeing now. You know, you think back to the dot-com boom of the, you know, beginning of the century, you remember, you know, lots of people went out of business because they couldn't get the software to work. People don't go out of business these days because they can't make the software work. They go out of business because they can't persuade anyone to buy it.
Well, we're going to continue this conversation in just a moment, and it's one of the questions I'll have is this the egg before the chicken or the chicken before the egg sort of thing? And we'll continue our discussion conversation with Alistair Driver from London this morning from Forbes.com. Right now, though, we want to check traffic at 5:15 on the opening bell on WGN. Here's Adam Chappelle.
From ABC News, Wall Street Now. Investors finished out February by erasing nearly all of the month's advances. The Dow Jones Industrial Average lost 123 points yesterday to close at 16,516. The S&P 500 dropped nearly 16 points, and the Nasdaq retreated 32.5. Wall Street Today will be looking for another positive report on construction spending as the Commerce Department releases data for January. Also today, Detroit automakers release their vehicle sales for February. While Middle Eastern countries quibble over a proposed freeze in petroleum output, Mexico's state-run oil company has stepped up to say that it's putting a hold on some exploration and production. The goal at Pemex is to help catch the international freefall in oil prices. And Western aerospace companies are looking east for a promise of profits. French aircraft builder Airbus breaks ground this week on a facility outside Beijing, while U.S.-based Boeing scouts locations also in China for a plane completion plant. Jim Ryan, ABC News.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 5:21. We're talking with Alistair Driver of Forbes magazine on the phone with us from London this morning. Alistair, you know, before the break, I said, is this the chicken before the egg or the egg before the chicken? And I think there's a lesson to be heard here by people who are in these fields starting out, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, again, I'll tell you, don't be misled by the occasional unicorn. Yep, they exist, but that's, if you like, that's got, gives you the same sort of odds as a lottery ticket. Much, much better odds, even if the returns aren't quite as spectacular, is to be clear about what you're doing and why someone might want it, and talk to a problem that already exists that you can solve better.
Is it a situation?
So much of that is not about technology. It's about marketing and understanding how people do business.
Is it a situation where if you're a tech person and you have a really good idea, it might behoove you to find the sales and business person to be your partner?
Yeah, absolutely. I do mentoring for tech businesses, specifically in the educational space. And you know, one of the questions I always ask them early on is how many developer days went into building your product? And sometimes it's less than 100. The product isn't hard, but we talk about what they've got to do to be successful. It's always, pretty much invariably, it's about finding a route to market, and that's about someone who knows that market and they understand the sales process there, and, you know, preferably have a big book of contacts already there as well.
And so I can see some of the tech, we have a lot of startup incubators here in Chicago. And I can see them, you know, formulating new plans maybe going forward where they have the infrastructure for tech, but they also have these sales guys who know the business.
Yeah, absolutely. And I, you know, I'd actually go one step further. This is a project of mine. Whether it will ever get off the ground, I have no idea. But, you know, if anyone's listening there and they fancy this one, somebody should start a fund which invests in tech businesses run by non-techie people over the age of 50 who really understand markets.
It's like,
I think if those guys could find some competent techies, they could really, really do well.
Because, you know, just in the short time we've been doing the opening bell here on WGN, it seems the successful businesses that we're talking to are just what you have said. There's the guy who knows how to code and knows how to put the app together, and then the guy who knows how to sell it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, 15, 20 years ago, technology was so new that the big advantage was being able to make the technology work. I think the balance is changing now in most markets, and some people would say this is the natural order of things being restored. I think the balance is turning back towards the people who know how to run businesses, how to motivate teams, and how to get potential customers excited about their product.
Alistair Driver is a contributor for Forbes magazine. You can read his latest on Forbes.com. We've linked it to you on Twitter, everybody. And you can follow him at ACDDRYBURGH at Twitter. So, Alistair, thanks for being with us again on the opening bell. Good to have you.
Thank you.
Have a great day. Well, yesterday, over the weekend, I should say, it was the letter everybody's been looking for. It was the letter from Warren Buffett declaring his faith in the U.S. economy, his annual shareholder letter to his investors and shareholders, was very optimistic on America. And we're going to bring in ABC News correspondent Aaron Katursky now. Aaron, this was a letter that many people were waiting for.
Well, it's a relentlessly upbeat assessment of the U.S. economy, of American prospects, and I think it's kind of Warren Buffett's way to say, you know, don't bet on America. He said, don't bet against America. He said that many times before, but this time he's saying it in the context of an election year when he says he knows it can be tempting for candidates to speak about the country's problems, which he says, of course, only they can solve. And what he calls this negative drumbeat may give Americans a reason to believe their children will not live as well as they themselves do. And Buffett said that view is dead wrong.
Does he offer any examples of why he feels the way he does or why he is optimistic?
Sure. He says American GDP per capita is about $56,000. He said, in real terms, that's about six times the amount in 1930, the year he was born, a leap far beyond the wildest dreams of his parents or their contemporaries. And he says it's not that, you know, U.S. citizens are you know, intrinsically more intelligent today or work harder than they did in 1930, but they work more efficiently and they produce far more. And he calls that an all-powerful trend that's certain to continue.
He also talks about the future and what kinds of jobs we might see in the future, and tech was pretty heavy among those.
Sure, tech very heavy, and he's, I think, says that's part of the reason why most of today's children are the luckiest crop in history, because they're, you know, going to be in transportation and entertainment and communication and medical services, and he compares babies born today to, say, Rockefeller. Had the power and the fame, but could not, however, live the way we do now. And that's not to say I think it's all, you know, pie in the sky. Buffett says the pie to be shared by the next generation will be far larger than today's. But, of course, how it's divided, he says, will remain fiercely contentious.
And so there's a takeaway here for both investors and parents of young children who are just getting into school about what avenue they should take in terms of their learning.
Well, I think so. And he says nothing is more important to keep in mind than, you know, producing what people want, or even more so in delivering what people don't yet know they want. He said his parents could not envision a television set. He said when he was, you know, in his 50s, he didn't really think he needed a personal computer. And so he says, look, there's no reason to be betting against America. He says America's golden goose of commerce and innovation will continue to lay more and larger eggs.
People also look to this for possible investment avenues, and he's big on insurance again this year.
Yeah, Geico in particular, and a few other, you know, things. And I'll leave it to the experts to tell you whether this is sound advice or not. But obviously, he goes through the balance sheet and talks a little bit about insurance. Property casualty branch of the industry has been the engine that he says has propelled his expansion since 1967. And he says he's brought National Indemnity, the largest property casualty company in the world. And, you know, all that sort of you know, all that sort of fine. But he says there's you know, there's no reason to, again, to think things are going to be dramatically different in that area.
And there's a reason people who are in this arena listen to him closely. He's a very successful guy.
Right. Yeah. It's the Oracle. Right. And so there's no he lays it out, I think, in a way that, you know, that ordinary investors can understand. This is not, you know, an intrinsic data point by data point breakdown of a company or its potential or potential pitfalls like you'd see on, you know, the Showtime show Billions or something like that. This is just more of a broad sweep and you know, I think, too, a broad justification for why Berkshire Hathaway is positioned the way it is. And he's pretty real. He says, look, we're doing well. But he says the wild card in all of this is a serious attack. And he says Berkshire shares that risk with the rest of, you know, the American citizenry.
ABC News correspondent Aaron Katursky with us this morning. It's 529. This is the opening bell.
You're listening to the opening bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to the program. It's 5:37 on the opening bell, and this morning we're going to talk to you, have a conversation about a Chicago restaurant company that's best known for its hot dogs. They've decided they're going to go green, and they're making it easy for hungry customers to grab healthy food and fly, literally. Manolis Alpogiannis is with us this morning. He is with TAG, Manoli, I should say. Manoli is on the phone with us this morning. He is the head of a TAG restaurant company in Chicago. You probably know it best as America's Dog. Good morning, Manoli. How are you?
Good morning, Steve. I'm doing well. Thank you.
Welcome to the opening bell. I saw your photograph and just put it out on Twitter this morning of the new Green Market. Tell us about it.
The Green Market is a really, really fun project that that got started about really 2 years ago, and we were already at O'Hare and have had a tremendous amount of success out there. But O'Hare had a space available, and we decided to develop a concept that was going to be a grab and go concept, but to have a more a healthier twist to it. So thinking about what things were like just a few years ago, with New York listing the calorie count on sodas, and there has been a movement going on in America where people are becoming more health conscious. So initially, Green Market was supposed to just list calorie counts and offer healthier options to flyers, which sometimes is a little bit hard to find at airports and people that are on the go. And as time went on, we started to develop the concept and really rolled up our sleeves and got more and more involved in making something that was really unique to O'Hare. And you don't find it at airports really anywhere. So started to be more farm to table. So started to be really, really health conscious. And so, for instance, we have six coolers at Green Market. And normally what you see is, you know, one cooler that is stacked with Pepsi, Diet Pepsi, Coke, and all that kind of stuff. And of course, you have to have that kind of stuff, but we have really only one shelf that's dedicated to that. But we have lots of different flavored waters and different craft sodas and things like we wanted to make sure that there's local products like out in the western suburbs, there's a produce company that is growing their own tomatoes and hothouses and lettuce and cucumbers and all that kind of stuff. So we're not shipping it in from Mexico, but we really can't even took it a step for it. As we kept getting more and more involved, my brother's a chef. And of course you're going to buy your bread locally and things like that. But, we took it a step further and we wanted to bring, you know, as much food as possible and be real conscious of that, and then be conscious of the calories and the, you know, the nutritional value. But even a step further from that, we wanted to, you know, go find the wood that we were using to build the place locally. So some of the wood products that we used in building the store was from local fallen trees in the Chicagoland area. The light fixtures were local, made in Chicago. we just really wanted to make sure that we made a real conscious effort to make this from A to Z. Even our POS system, our point of sale system, was a local company that we decided to go with.
Well, let's talk about the way that you've set this up in terms of, like, you know, when you go to the airport, it seemed to be in the past you can get a greasy piece of a slice of pizza or a sticky bun or something like that. This is all, look, at least the way I'm seeing it, all stuff that a flyer can put in their bag or carry with them handily. And to add the healthy option to that, that seems like it would be a big win. How's it going over with people, and what reaction are you seeing?
Okay, so we opened up on Friday. And, you know, you're right. There's always going to be a place where you could get a slice of pizza or a sticky bun or even a hot dog. And if you look at, like, market trends, you see that America's moving towards those healthy options that we're talking about. But at the same time, you look at something like Shake Shack or Portillo's. People are not going to stop eating food that really we're used to, that we love, that is delicious. People are going to, you know, keep treating themselves to that, but they're weighing it out. Whereas, you know, Americans grew up having, I grew up, you know, being, you know, around McDonald's, and we may go there, you know, growing up or whatever, once a week or something like that. But now what's happening is that people are still eating that, but they're balancing it off with a healthy option for the rest of the, for the rest of the week. We opened up on Friday, and the success of this store is way more than I had anticipated. When we opened up, there was a line that was about 15 people deep, and it didn't stop. It just kept going on and on and on. And this isn't like a neighborhood store where people in the neighborhood know us and they want to try it out. Hey, it's something new. These are people who are really seeking healthy options and looking for alternatives. So there's definitely a huge market there for this.
So I come in and I have a flight that's going to leave in 10 minutes. I want something healthy. What are my choices? Give me, what's the best thing on your menu that you'd offer me?
Well, hey, you know, of course we have the crowd pleasers, right? Everyone, 50% of what people eat is, when it comes to sandwiches or quick bites, is going to be turkey or chicken. But, you know, some of the things that my brother came up with was a sriracha grilled chicken wrap with bean sprouts and edamame and some cabbage. And it's under 300 calories. It has very low carbs. And then, you know, we give people the option. If they want to add a little sauce on the side, we have packets there for them to grab, put in the bag, take it on the plane, and enjoy it on the way wherever they're going.
And the price point, you know, the airports are always generally more expensive than a restaurant that you'd get outside, probably because of the rent you have to pay there. But what's the price point on something like this?
Rent is definitely a consideration. But everything we do is, all the sandwiches are $7.99. Okay. So it's, I think, a moderately priced place that you would find in downtown or in one of the neighborhoods.
I want to talk to you a little bit more about POS, your POS system, and then also the future. And we'll do that as our conversation with Manoli continues after the break. We're talking about the new green market at O'Hare. And we need to check traffic, though. It's sleeting and freezing rain this morning, and Adam Chappelle's watching the roads. Good morning, Adam.
You're listening to The Opening Bell on 720 WGN.
Welcome back to The Opening Bell on the futures this morning. Dow futures higher 139 points now. The S&P futures up 18. Crude oil is flat this morning. Gold pre-trade is up, and some of the commodities also up this morning. More on the commodities now. Here's Orion Samuelson.
Good morning, Steve, and happy first day of March that, at least in this part of the country, is coming in like a lion. Will it go out like a lamb? We'll wait and see. Weather has been a factor this winter in California. Thanks to El Nino, they received a pretty good amount of snow and rain in the months of December and January. But come February, the rains dried up. Predictions of that El Nino winter bringing a series of heavy storms to the West Coast, greeted with a lot of optimism by California farmers. But then, come the 1st of November, All right, 1st of February, warmer than expected sea temperatures, and apparently the rain has moved further north, so the drought in California is certainly not over. We ended the month of February with corn down for its fifth straight session. Soybean futures also moved lower yesterday, and wheat continued to be pressured as well by large supplies. Livestock futures, the event yesterday was the February contract of live cattle futures terminated at noon with a pretty good gain, up $1.95 a hundredweight to end at $139.50. Now, the active month, April, ended down 2 cents at $136.97 yesterday. Apparently, futures traders waiting to see what kind of a cash beef price we'll see this week in the Southern Plains. Well, that's the report on the last day of February, and we go into the first day of March. You have a good one. Steve, back to you.
All right. Thanks, Orion, and have a great day as well. We're chatting, having a conversation on the opening bell this morning with Manoli Alpogiannis of America's Dog, better known as America's Dog, Tag Restaurants in Chicago. Manoli, we're actually going through some of the photographs of some of the other stuff. And by the way, I have to just say, the hot dog, every time I see the hot dog, it makes me drool a little bit because it is delicious. But the reason I bring all that up is because your family knows how to do restaurants, and you've done something unique here in terms of like sourcing locally. Talk to me a little bit about that some more and your POS. How is it unique in this case?
Our mission really was to get as much product in at the store within 100 miles of O'Hare. And I feel real good about what we did. I think that as time goes on, more and more product, you know, 5 years ago, you weren't going to be buying tomatoes that were grown in Chicago in the wintertime, right? But one of the other changes that's happened is Chicago has been investing in its technology sector. And there's a company, a technology company called Breadcrumb. And Breadcrumb is a iPad-based point-of-sale company where you they ship you out the iPad and you plug it in. And with a little information, you've got a register at your fingertips. So we've been using it since we opened, for a few days now. And it's been a real interesting experience. My background has always been to have, you know, the big, bulky point-of-sale machines. But, for instance, we were all set with one point-of-sale system, one terminal. And I called them up immediately, and I said, hey, you know, I need a second register out here. And so they're FedExing out an iPad that's already uploaded with my menu. And before you know it, I have somebody that has a handheld point-of-sale system. Again, the technology and all the support is in Chicago. And so that just adds to what we're doing and keeping true to having Chicago-based products in our store.
And it's interesting we have you on today because it sort of ties in with the conversation we were having before we got to you with Alistair Driber, who's written a piece in Forbes today about the successful folks that he interviews know the business side of stuff really well, and then there's the tech guys who know that stuff really well. And when they come together, it's really sort of like a hurricane. And that's what I'm hearing you say, is that you've got this point of sale system that's making your job of being the great marketer and restaurateur easier.
Yeah, it's very, very interesting because I have not seen a technology like this that is so easy to use. Now, you know, because iPads are still, you know, they've been around for a while, but they are still relatively new. When you look at the big picture, there are definitely some hiccups along the way, and you have to be willing to deal with that. However, when the overall process, the overall software that's behind it, is really seamless, and we do things like, you know, I get a report that's emailed to me every night and tells you, you know, things like how many sandwiches we sold, how many, you know, sodas, but all that stuff has been around for a while. What takes this a little step further is that you can input into the system some tickler, some notifications, so that if you are running low, if you've sold 30 turkey sandwiches, it will automatically notify the people that are on the email list and let you know that you're running low. So you really start to monitor what you're selling. But take it a step further, if you have 50 cases of bottled water sitting in your warehouse ready to stock the store, but you only sell one a day, that's, 50 cases of, money sitting in your warehouse. What this allows you to do is really be able to manage your cash flow a lot better and only order really what you need, so that as time goes on, the money's, in the bank account, not sitting in the warehouse in high inventory.
We have just about a minute and a half left here, but I want to ask you, are you thinking yet about expanding outside of the airport environment with this?
I'm not sure about outside the, I think that there's a lot of space within the airport, but really within the airport system nationally. So we know that people want healthier options. They want it quick, fast. They don't want a lot of starches. They don't want a lot of preservatives. They want things to be all natural and to have low calorie counts. I think that my father always told me, right, if something's not broke, don't try and fix it. We know that this is working in an airport environment, and so my goal would be to try and find other locations right here at home, being true to our mission, at Midway, at other terminals at O'Hare, but also then starting to expand in other airports around the country.
So if people are listening in their earbuds this morning, they're at O'Hare, and they may want to stop in at some point today, where are you located? What terminal and concourse?
We're located at Terminal 3, Concourse L. So if you're flying out on American, Virgin, Spirit, JetBlue, Dubai, all of those airlines fly out of Terminal 3, Concourse L. And it's the green market.
Manoli Alpogiannis of TAG Tag Restaurants in Chicago, the America's Dog, you probably know that. But now Green Market is the front and center business there. Manoli, thank you for being with us in the opening bell today. Best of luck with this.
Thanks so much, Steve.
Have a great day.
You too.
And that's the opening bell for today. We'll be back with you bright and early tomorrow morning at 5 o'clock. The show is produced by Mary Sandberg, our production assistant, Kevin Powell, Ross Cochran, and our engineer today is Ben Cortez. Again, have a great day. The Steve Cochran Show is next. It's 5:57.